to labor for the 22nd of May. I've got a big agenda today with lots of public hearings, so we want to give everybody enough time to, well, enough time within an hour to present your information. So what we're going to be doing is, why don't we open up a work session on, or a public hearing on Senate Bill 344A. You could.
Madam Chair and committee members, this measure prohibits public and private educational institutions from requiring, requesting, or compelling a student or a prospective student to disclose or provide access to personal social media accounts. Prohibits action or threat of action for students' refusal to disclose the information. Specifies educational institution may conduct an investigation into compliance with any laws, regulatory requirements, and student misconduct. Exempts social media accounts used solely for educational purposes at the institution. Exempts institution from the collection of access information through the application of policies governing computer use. That information cannot be used without consent. Authorizes civil action for equitable relief and or damages. There are no amendments. There's no revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay. Thank you very much. Our first witness is going to be our chair. Madam Chair, please introduce yourself and let's proceed.
Thank you, fellow Business and Labor Committee. I'm Margaret Doherty, and I'm the House Representative from House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And I want to begin by explaining why you have yet another version of the social media privacy bill in front of you. Senate Bill 344 is the higher ed version of the social media bill, which deals with privacy protections for students at universities. We split the higher ed portion of the bill from the employment section because we felt it would be best to deal with the concerned issues separately in order to ensure that nothing was overlooked. After a great deal of work, various groups, including the universities and the ACLU, came together to create the bill in front of you, and I'm glad we could reach a consensus bill together that will protect student privacy. I understand that this bill deals primarily with questions relating to password use and that various stakeholders will be meeting in the interim to discuss the friending issues. I want to thank everyone who agreed to come to the table to work this out. It came up with a good solution. The bill has no opposition. It's good policy, and I look forward to passing it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there questions or comments?
Okay. May I be excused to the front, please?
Did you say pretty, please?
Pretty, please.
With pretty, please, you may, Madam Chair. Please come join us back at the dais.
Actually, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes, we have two more people. Becky Strauss and Rebecca Ball, please. And Representative Widener?
That testimony was a little long. I was a firm yes, but I'm getting weaker if the testimony goes real long.
Wait till the floor. I got it in one sentence.
We'll pray for reinforcements. Please, if you would, introduce yourselves and let's proceed. Turn the chair back to the chair.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. Becky Strauss here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 344A and contemplation of Representative Widener's comments, I will be very brief. We're in support of the bill. We've appreciated the opportunity to come before you a couple times on this concept and your patience with us splitting up the bills and coming here twice on a similar issue. We've had some productive conversations with representatives from the Oregon University system and think that we have a good product to move forward on a consensus bill. We do reserve and have appreciated the agreement to talk about the issue of what we're calling coercive friending in the interim, whereby an institution of higher education would require a student to quote-unquote friend them on Facebook. I think that there were some issues that weren't fully vetted along those lines, and so we agreed to take that out of the bill and or I guess more accurately not include it in the bill and save the conversation for another day. Thanks for your support.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Rebecca Ball. I represent the University of Oregon. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon University System. We are in support of this bill. We believe it's sound policy as it relates to student privacy. Mm-hmm. I believe that you did a great job doing an overview of the bill, so we'll just say that we've appreciated your leadership and working with Senator Starr and Senator Burdick's office and ACLU to develop this consensus bill, and we appreciate your support.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions to the panel? Representative Widener?
Real quick one. Becky, could you possibly extend this or work on it to protect us from the president and the IRS as well? our emails.
Chair Doherty, Representative Widener, those are not the issues that this bill is covering, but would be happy to look at those with you, what we might do to influence the federal level.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We only have two people signed up. Anyone else would like to speak on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 344A, and I open up a work session on Senate Bill 344A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 344A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 344A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Good idea.
Okay. I've seen none. Brandon, could you take the vote, please, or call the roll, please?
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative Kenemer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. Okay. With that, Senate Bill 344A goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'd like to carry this since it's a companion of the other bill that I have. And with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 344A and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 625.
Madam Chair and committee members, this measure allows the director of DCBS, or local building official, administrating building inspection program to determine whether the structure as set forth in the plans and specifications meets the standards of the state building code, including fire and life safety standards. Specifies that the state fire marshal or local fire official may provide advice to the building officials, inspectors, or the department employees concerning the building code standards. Requires local building officials and the DCBS employees to give consideration to the advice from the fire marshal or the local fire officials. There's no amendment. Came over from the Senate floor with a vote 28-0. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. We have two people signed up, Ryan Tribbett and Brian Krieg.
Thank you. Ryan Tribbett here today on behalf of the National Electrical Contractors Association. During the interim, there were some issues raised from the subcontractor community about some lack of clarity in statute between where the authority of the building official lied and where the fire marshal authority lied and sort of where those places intersect. As we started looking at to the best way to find sort of provide some clarity in statute, we found an AG opinion from back in 1985 and a subsequent agreement that had been made in 2001 between the State Building Codes Division and the State Fire Marshal's Office. So we put together a piece of legislation. The original bill was not, was pretty poorly drafted, so we went into sort of a working group conversation with the State Fire Marshals, the Local Fire Marshals Association, the Fire Chiefs, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, Building Codes Division, and the subcontractor community, and we believe what's in front of you is a consensus bill that reflects both that 1985 Attorney General opinion and the subsequent 2001 written agreement between State Building Codes and the State Fire Marshals. There's no opposition to the bill. It's a good bill and will help our industry. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Krieg?
Members of the committee, my name is Brian Krieg, here representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association today. We're one of the organizations that's on the letter in front of you. The bill just does simply clarify who is in charge at some of the final inspections of the building. And it's been a situation occasionally where there's been a lack of clarity on that, and the contractors kind of end up as a ping pong back and forth a little bit as that's getting sorted out. And it's never a comfortable place to be in when you have two authorities trying to decide who's the one for the final on it. So this just helps us clarify our work. It'll make things a little bit more efficient out there, and everybody will get along great. And it was a good process of having everybody discuss this on the bill. So
good. I like hearing that. Okay, are there any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen. Okay, anyone else would like to speak on Senate Bill 625? Okay, seeing none, I close public hearing on Senate Bill 625, and I open up a work session on Senate Bill 625.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 625A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Barton moves House Bill or Senate Bill 625 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Weidman.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Excused.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kinnamer.
Aye.
Chair Representative
Doherty. Aye. Okay, with that, Senate Bill 625 is approved. Representative Matthews, could you carry this to the floor,
certainly,
please? Thank you very much. Okay, close work session on Senate Bill 625. Open up a work session or a public hearing on Senate Bill. Nancy's not here, is he? Okay, on Senate Bill 678.
Madam Chair and committee members, this measure extends the exclusive remedy protections of workers' compensation statutes to the partners, limited liability company members, general partners, limited liability partners, and limited partners. Creates an exception if negligence is a substantial factor and occurs outside the capacity that qualifies a person for an exemption. Applies the exclusive remedy protections only for claims or causes of action arising on or after the effective date. Declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no amendment. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact. Senate Bill 678 came from the Senate on a vote of 28-0.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have three people signed up, Drew Hagendorn, J.L. Wilson, and Jan Meekum. I'd come forward.
Madam Chair, while they're popping up, I just wanted to note the letter, our Small Business Task Force, in which Representative Thatcher is also a member. I'm co-chairing with Representative Freeman. This was our inaugural. We had our inaugural meeting yesterday. This was the first bill we chose to hear.
Okay.
You have a letter there. It came through unanimously, and appreciate your attention to that.
Letter of support?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know it didn't get passed out.
That's fine.
Thank you very much, Chair Doherty. Committee members, Drew Hagendorf appearing today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors and the Defense Self Insurance Association, testifying in support of Senate Bill 678A. I'm not going to delve into the policy justifications for the language. We've discussed this in this committee per our conversation on House Bill 2923A. This committee unanimously adopted, I believe, -3 amendments, and then unanimously, actually, I don't know if the vote on the amendments was unanimous, but it was unanimously moved to the Rules Committee. It's the exact same language that we adopted into the Senate bill over on the Senate side, so it's exactly what the Management Labor Advisory Committee had approved. So you've already approved this, and we'd ask you to approve it again and send it to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing AOI, and I'm here just because I'm glued to the hip with Drew on this issue, and I've always wanted to just limit my testimony to good bill should pass, and that's what I'm going to do.
Thank you.
Good testimony.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jan Meekums, State Director of NFIB, and I would also like to reiterate that I am here just for the record to voice our support for Senate Bill 678. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Well, I was worried about running out of time. I think we're going to have plenty of, we're just going to have to stay, and we'll just ask you lots of questions.
Let's be optimistic later.
Madam Chair, I mean, the one positive was JL's testimony was incredible, and I'm glad Jan's not glued to the hip of Drew.
That'd be a heavy
lift. So are we. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, panelists. Okay. Any
long testimony or long comments?
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 678? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill Senate Bill 678 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 678.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 678 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 678A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I guess I'd just mention my appreciation, Madam Chair, that we're moving the Senate bill, if not the House bill, and that we're going to get this. This is a very good law. We need to pass it.
Okay.
Good.
Very good. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, could you call the roll?
Representative Whitening.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Excused.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenneman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Chair Representative
Aye. Okay, with that, Senate Bill 678 is approved. Would someone like to carry this to the floor?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. We also have Representative Witt that did, so we'll have...
I'm cool either way.
Okay. So Witt and Barton.
No, we don't need to co-carry again. I'm happy to defer to...
Okay. Representative Witt.
No worries, Madam Chair.
You guys flipping?
I nominate Representative Witt. Thank you.
Okay.
Second.
Nominates Representative Witt. Okay. With that, we'll close the...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could Representative Thompson vote since we haven't closed
the session? We have a list of three so far.
Oh, there we go.
We're going to do all of that at the end.
Thank you.
If that's okay. Okay with you guys? Okay, so I close the work session on Senate Bill 678. And I will open up a... I'm going to open up a work session on... I'm going to go back. On Senate Bill 520.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure prescribes changes to the Oregon Credit Union Act. The committee heard the measure on the 20th, heard from the Credit Union Association. There are no amendments before you. There's no revenue impact, and there's no fiscal impact.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 520 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 520 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I enjoyed this bill. The Credit Union Act is interesting to me. I can't explain why.
We appreciate you not taking the time to do that.
the one component, and I'm convinced that it will be applied well, at least for the foreseeable future, involving the parity with out-of-state credit unions functioning in Oregon. I just want to note that there is the potential. To the extent that market expands and other states, for example, Florida-based, or Nevada, other states that are currently credit unions-based are not operating in Oregon, if that expands, which may well happen in the next 10, 20 years, we may have to tinker with it.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just on that notice, I recall testimony indicated there are currently five.
Correct.
Just, so sure it's a very small number, right, and now. I think a lot of us share that concern. Thank you.
Okay, are there other discussion of the bill? Okay, seeing none. Did we have a motion on this one?
Yeah, I did move it.
Okay. Okay, so it's been moved.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, any more discussion? Not seeing any. Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Whitener.
Aye.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenner.
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty.
Aye. And with that, the Senate Bill 520 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Kenner, would you like to carry this one?
No.
Be privileged.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Close that work session. You're going to use that.
I'm going to do this. Okay. We're waiting for Senator Prosniewski to come down. But before we do that, we need a couple of folks that need to vote. So
I'm going to suspend the rules on first Matthews, then Fagan, then Thompson, three different bills. Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative Matthews to vote on Senate Bill 344.
Okay. Representative Barton moves to suspend the rules so Representative Matthews can vote on Senate Bill 344. Is there any objection? Seeing none. Representative Matthews, how do you vote?
Representative Matthews votes aye.
Thank you very
Madam
much.
Chair.
Nice third person. That's great.
Representative Matthews votes aye.
Interesting.
It's not the first time he spoke.
The representative will be doing that all day.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative Fagan to vote on Senate Bill 625.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to suspend the rules to allow Representative Fagan to vote on Senate Bill 625. Is there any objection? You see none? Representative Fagan?
The esteemed representative from North Clackamas, Multnomah County's votes aye.
Thank you very much.
That a girl.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative Thompson to vote on Senate Bill 678.
Okay. Representative Barton moves to suspend the rules to allow Representative Thompson to vote on Senate Bill 678. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Okay, votes aye. Thank you very much. Seeing the good senator here, we're now... Okay, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 795A.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure allows the holder of a brewery public house license issued by OLCC to store malt beverages at one location other than the premises where the manufacturing of the beverage occurs. No amendment, no revenue impact, no fiscal impact came over from the Senate on a vote of 29-0.
Okay, thank you. Senator Poznanski, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to present to you Senate Bill 795. As the committee administrators discussed, what the measure is going to do is allow for a person or organization that has a brewer public house license within the state of Oregon to be able to actually operate two locations with the understanding that only one of those locations will be used for manufacturing, actually the production of beer, and the other second facility can be used for storage, retail sale, and you can actually transport whatever's being stored at the second location back to the first location to actually be used or retailed. And the need for this is, as you can imagine, in our I should say, for the record, I'm Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas Counties. I'm surprised my representative had not corrected me yet.
Yes. I would not think of it.
Unless given an opportunity.
That's not what he leaves on the messages on the telephone. So back to the to business. Basically, what this what we've learned is that a lot of the individuals going into brewing beer are starting off in very small locations, premises. They find out that, one, they're doing good because their product is selling very well, and that they need to expand. And unfortunately, in many cases, they're not able to expand at the same location as the original site. And so they will purchase or lease or rent another location so they can actually do this. We've had conflicting, interpretations, OLCC rules, as to what is required. It has been determined by OLCC the cleanest and clearest way to do is to adopt Senate Bill 795 to make it sure and clear within the statutes that a brewer public house licensee can in fact do what is intended under the bill. I should mention to you that I have had discussions with Paul Romaine, who represents the distributors and others in the state, and everyone was comfortable with the bill as it has been presented. I have with me Jason Currier, who is the owner and proprietor of Falling Sky Brewery in Eugene. He is the one that brought this to my attention, and working with him and other brewers in the Eugene-Springfield area, we bring to you Senate Bill 795. Madam Chair, if it's all right, I'd like for Jason to maybe give his perspective. There are a couple of amendments I do believe that may be coming your way, and if you would like comment from me, I'll be glad to give you that at that time.
Okay, thank you. No, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak about this bill. For the record, my name is Jason Currier, resident of Eugene. I'd first like to start out by saying, on behalf of Falling Sky Brewing and the Oregon Brewers Guild, that I'd like to thank you for amending the bill to allow the special events brewery public house license to include growler sales. And then moving on to the main issue for my company is we are a small brew pub, But we've had enormous success. We made 840 barrels our first year on a shortened year. And with growth comes challenges. Our original brewery location is 3,000 square feet, and that includes a full-scale restaurant. So we only have about 1,200 to 1,400 square feet for our brewery proper and our cold room. And so selling this amount of beer becomes challenging to store it all in one location and still operate a brewery. And when I went to the ULCC to ask about this, they informed me that if I took it off-site, then I could no longer bring it back to my brew pub and sell it. Once it left the brewery, then it became, it could only be like wholesaled to somebody else. And this seemed difficult for me to understand because I knew a lot of people had been doing this for years and years, and many breweries have grown in this fashion of using off-site cold storage to store their surplus beer and bringing it back. So to me, it seemed kind of like a reinterpretation of the rules and did not amount to a fair and level playing field for me as I try and grow my brewery in the same manner that others have done throughout the years. And so I talked to the OLCC about this, and they basically recommended that I seek legislative remediation on it. They don't have a problem with what I wanted to do, but they didn't feel like they could approve it given the current language of the law. So really, I consider this to be a housekeeping bill to fully implement the decision that was made a few years back to raise the self-distribution limit from 1,000 barrels to 5,000 barrels. It is virtually impossible for a small brew pub to be able to store 5,000 barrels annually of beer. So really, if the intention is to allow breweries to self-distribute, this is a necessary factor of that. And it doesn't affect privilege taxation or anything like that, because that's all taxed when we sell the beer. So, yeah, I'd be happy to answer any questions about that or the growler sales or anything else.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the panel? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you provided the opportunity to ask a question about growler sales, I've just been curious, is there any concern for public health in terms of the containers coming in that from the outside, where there's no control over the sanitation of the individual container?
In my pub, if somebody brings in a dirty growler, we're not going to fill it. In terms of public health, I don't think that that would be a concern. Generally, there aren't any microbes that can exist in a beer environment that pose any threat to physical health. That's why home brewing is allowed. We're allowed to, that's how my business started, was as a home brew business. And that's one of the first things you learn, is there's nothing that can live in beer that can make you sick.
That's good. Drinking for health. I like that.
No idea.
My beer is the foundation of civilization.
thank you very much.
They're always coming up with sales angles.
That could be a slogan.
Representative Witt, Madam Chair, if I could also respond. There's been an encouragement to allow for the nutritional goodness of beer to be listed, but we have not allowed that to happen yet. If you actually put that into a list, you would see that very high in B vitamins, very good for you, and it cures what ails you.
It's just
nobody else. That was a pun.
I do have a warning for those high school students that are out there watching this being streamed, that is just Representative Hosnansky's opinion and not necessarily something that we can use as arguments with our parents.
Madam Chair. Okay. We could get the good senator to put something else on the record. So are you saying man could live on beer alone?
Madam Chair, Representative Wagner, no, I'm not. We need to have a little bread to go with that beer.
Thank you. Representative Holvey.
And thank you. I really appreciate the testimony, so I don't have to be scared of the Christmas presents I get from Senator Brzezinski anymore.
We're glad of that. Any other questions of this panel?
Yes. We were going to talk about the Oregon Wine Growers Association. Amendments. I'd like to hear about that, please.
Oh, yeah.
Madam Chair and Representative Kilmer, excuse me. The amendments that are going to be coming forward is dealing with the from the Oregon Wine Growers Association. The specifics I'm going to allow for their affiliates to actually go through in detail. In the discussion of this, what we're attempting to do is allow for an individual to have a temporary service permit to fill growlers. And then also there's a second one that Jason's made reference to that would be one that would allow for special events for growlers to be filled. What you can imagine in the how the industry is moving forward, and you can see it in multiple cities in the state. I know Bend, as well as in Roseburg, you have places that are actually growler fill locations where you can actually go and get a growler filled. I believe what they want to be able to do under this provision of the license is to allow for a special event where individuals would be able to participate in whatever the event is and also have a growler filled for them on location of whatever that event would be. I am very supportive of both of those amendments and feel that those will help in fortify the industries of both wine and craft brewing in the state. There are two other amendments that have been contemplated that I believe are not going to be coming forward at this point because the individuals that are interested in what the outcome of those amendments are in negotiations as to what is the best way to go forward. I do understand that one of those is dealing with potential, what I would call dock sales. Specifically, the way it's been explained to me is that such as a brewer who has a retail account with a or wholesale account with someone that retails, that if they needed a product, they would be able to come to the dock and pick up the product that they needed instead of having it delivered to them. At least that's my conceptual understanding of what they want to do. My understanding is that, and the discussion is that OLCC believes they may be able to do that by rule, and that's what they are planning on doing. But if for some reason they determine that that's not the case, I believe they will walk hand in hand in Kumbaya and ask for an amendment at that time.
Okay. Thank you. I know that we have the wine growers coming up later. Any other questions to this panel? Okay, thank you very much.
Madam
thank
Chair
you,
and committee members, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, we have also signed up Paul Romaine and Dan Jarman.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We're very much in support of Senator Brzezinski's bill, 795. It does take care of a need. Basically, the beer industry is growing in the state thanks to your wise policies, and storage is necessary. So the brew pubs that start off as very small get larger. I don't know if you all had the opportunity to see a few weeks ago, but I think CNN Money did a little article on the top eight beer cities in America. Portland was number one, and Bend, I believe, was number seven or eight. So we had two of the top. The industry has been great for the state. We had two potential amendments that we withdrew. One of them was more tweaking somebody else, and we decided not to do that. The other one dealt with something that we believe is inherent in a license, and Senator Brzezinski talked a little bit about it. If you have a license to sell a product, you have a right under that license to acquire the product at that location where you can sell it. Some people deliver to that location, other people, there may be circumstances where there is no delivery. That is a winery, a brewery, a brew pub, a wholesaler, anybody who has a wholesale privilege. A retailer may run out of product and may need something quickly and may need to go down to the person with the wholesale privilege and pick up the product. We believe it's inherent in the license. We're working with the OLCC to make sure of that. We're not even sure you need a rule on that. We think it's probably just fine. So we're not asking for any our dash 3 or dash 4 amendment at this time, and hopefully we will never ask for our dash 3s or dash 4 amendments. On the stuff that Mr. Jarman is going to talk to you about, we have no objection. I believe there are two things. One of them is the ability to fill a growler Here you have a person with a temporary service permit who can pour 200 glasses of wine but can't fill one growler. That's ridiculous. Same thing with beer. So that should be equaled out. And the second thing, I believe, is the ability of somebody to take a bottle that's been opened at the winery. They go to the winery, they taste it, to take it home with them. That's actually, once it's open, they're not supposed to take it home with them. It's a little ridiculous. They've already paid for it, so they should be able to take it home. So I believe if that's what Mr. Jarman is asking for, we would be very much in support of both of those. If it's not what he's asking about, I reserve the right to come out and bash it later.
Thank you. We noted.
Good morning, Mr. Chair Doherty, members of the committee. I'm Dan Jarman, representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. And yes, some of the issues that we'd like to discuss with you today have already been mentioned. Let me just go into a little more detail. Three issues have really emerged this session, since the start of the session. Two having to deal with the growler issue, that this is a bill that your committee first started with and passed. It's been signed by the governor. It's now law. And let me just mention some of the things that we need to get cleaned up as it relates to some OLCC rules and OLCC issues that have emerged. First, having to deal with a temporary service permit. Mr. Romaine is correct that once you are hired by a facility, a restaurant, or other location, you can get a temporary service permit to be able to pour alcoholic beverages. But we have a temporary rule recently from the OLCC that says you cannot pour a growler. So a bartender, for instance, can sit, as Mr. Romaine said, and pour glasses of wine all night long, but is not allowed to actually pour a growler. So we would like a clarification of the law that those with a temporary service permit are able to fill growlers. The temporary service permit is good for 45 days until you get the regular service permit. So that would be the first fix that we'd like to get taken care of.
And this is both beer and wine?
That would be beer and wine, yes, Madam Chair. The second has to do with special events. A lot of wineries, a lot of breweries will go do special events. This is maybe a fair, or let's say the convention center is having a big wine tasting to promote the industry. One of the nice things about the growlers, as you know from the testimony a few months ago, is that you can put the growlers in some portable units, and you can take those to locations and pour growlers. It doesn't just have to be at your winery or at your restaurant. That's become quite popular, especially down in the southern part of the state. So this would allow a winery, for instance, or a brew pub to have a portable growler, take it to the convention center during a tasting. When they're selling their wines by the bottle, they could also sell growlers. We think that that just is a natural extension of the growler bill, and that would be the second clarification. And then the third clarification, as Mr. Romaine alluded to, currently in the law for an on-premise licensee, if a consumer does not finish a bottle of wine, he or she can just put a cork in it, leave the restaurant, go home and finish the bottle of wine. That specific privilege does not exist for a winery licensee, and we have a situation down in Southern Oregon where there's some OLCC agents who've looked at customers at wineries who have purchased a bottle of wine from the winery. They've sat in the tasting room, they've maybe consumed parts of the bottle of wine, and they have not allowed that consumer to actually take that partially consumed bottle home. So all we would be doing is adding that privilege to the winery license that exists now for restaurants. A very simple fix. It just doesn't make sense that your only option is either to finish the bottle of wine and get in your car and drive home, or pour that wine out before you leave. So we think this is just a very, hopefully a simple fix, and one that's not controversial. I do want, before I wrap up, to address Representative Witt's question. That's a very good question about what you do with the health aspects of the growler. We, as soon as the growler bill was passed, started working with the OLCC on what we'll call best practices for the consumers and for the industry. And they now have something that they put on their webpage. We've sent it out to the Oregon Restaurant Association, to restaurants, also to wineries, to have them teach their consumers about what are the best practices for growlers. And one of those would be making sure that that's a clean bottle that comes back to the winery or comes back to the brewery or comes back to the restaurant. Sounds simple to all of us, but sometimes people don't think about that. So it's, in our view, more of a consumer education campaign that we're launching as it relates to growlers, and hopefully we'll have some success with that. But that's something that we knew we wanted to address on some other aspects of the growler sales, and we did that right away with the OLCC, and we thank them for their help with us. There's no objection that we've heard from anyone, including the OLCC, to these three fixes in this bill. Very much thank Senator Perzanski for allowing us to do this. We talked with him about some of these things, and he thought it was most appropriate in this very generous relating to clause to do these things that we just see as sort of cleanups with the OLCC statute. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions? Representative Widener?
The amendments, we don't have them yet, correct?
Chair Doherty, Representative Widener, thank you for mentioning that. Yes, we just and recently been in contact with the Brewers Guild, who said, well, if we're going to fix this for the temporary license and all the or the temporary service permit and the special events license for wineries, can we also do that for the breweries? Absolutely fine with us. We're happy to add that. Just because that request came in late, we don't have that incorporated into the amendment that we thought would be ready today. So if we could beg the indulgence of the committee to maybe address this at the next work session, we will have that paperwork already and be able to pass the bill the next time you meet.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Pardon?
Any other just questions? Just a matter of process.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not moving the bill today because we're
looks like we might have to come in Friday. So I don't know if we would want to do something.
No, we've got next week. Yeah, plenty of time. Plenty of time.
Thank you, though, Representative.
February. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for that brilliant idea.
Yes.
Madam Chair, if I might just address that. First of all, you do have till the 31st, so you're safe. But
we have February, too.
Yeah, February, too, yes. Actually, we don't want you to wait till February. The other thing, the OLCC is actually a very responsible agency, and they try and enforce the laws. The problem is things crop up periodically, and really what happens is the industry sort of takes care of it informally when it's sort of a minor little deal, and then it starts becoming a bigger problem. It comes to OLCC's attention, and what they do is say, you need a fix. And that's why we come into you periodically with these things. It's not because of some evil policy at the OLCC to make sure nobody can do anything. It's actually working with the industry. They've been very good about doing that, about when a problem comes to them, how do we solve the problem, and trying to get people together. So please look upon the OLCC as a very good regulatory agency that's been very willing to work with the industry.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have no one else signed up for Senate Bill 795. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this bill? Okay, if not, I'm going to close the work session, the public hearing on Senate Bill 795, and we're going to be holding it over until we get the amendments. Okay, with that, that's everything. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, I will see you in although we have floor on, I think we're going to have floor on Friday. We'll see you guys on Monday. Okay, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you very much.